Chapter 10, November 1817. It was a phenomenon he remembered from his own school days. The restless mood, seemingly verging on mania, that took hold of a group of young people on a day of high winds. The storm of previous weeks was gone, the sky no longer the dark, leaden gray of premature night, but a bright, cold blue, despite the encroaching winter. The wind, however, had kept its spirit. It rattled the windows and howled through chinks in the frames and under the doors, moaning through the trees like the end of the world. Autumn leaves piled in corners and got caught in eddies until the whole school seemed to be disintegrating in a whirlwind of brown and amber. The students were caught in that queer, cheerful mood, high-spirited and raucous, the result of residual excitement from the previous week's festivities and the effect of the gale combined. Segundus felt as if he was spending most of his lessons trying to keep the boys in their seats rather than teaching, and was glad when Mrs. White rang the bell for dinner. The children ran screeching from the room, leaving Segundus to tidy up. Another day he might have chided them, kept them in the classroom until everything had been returned to its proper order, but it was almost the last lesson of the week, and there was so little light left in the ever-shortening days that he could not begrudge them their excitement. In a way, he was glad for it. For the few moments of peace and silence as he straightened the chairs and put away books. Levy would already be in the dining room to settle the students down before the food was served. Segundus would not be needed for a few minutes. He took a moment to look around the room. The storm that had churned his mind and insides for the first weeks of term was settling bit by bit, his legs becoming steadier as he adjusted to the waves amidst the tides of the school. Of his school. He smiled a little to himself. He had known before, of course he had, but there was a difference between knowing a thing and believing it. He realized now, scanning the empty classroom and inhaling the chalk and ink smell of it, that it was his, and that it was good. His smile still lingered as he crossed the hall towards the dining room. It was startled from his face when the front door blew open with a tremendous bang that made him fairly leap in surprise. A large shadow filled the open frame like a bad omen. A moment later, the shadow stepped into the light of the hall and revealed itself to be a man, who removed his hat and revealed himself to be John Childermas, who let out a muttered oath and rushed around to shut the door behind him. The wind had come in with him and was toying with some loose papers and pieces of ribbon which had been left lying around the entrance hall. Segundus quickly stepped up to help him as the wind was not very amenable to being shut out again, as if it too wanted to be safe from the weather outside. It took a great deal of effort between them, but they managed to slam the door shut once more. They paused, backs to the door, while they regained their breath. "You have been honing your skill of making dramatic entrances, I see," said Segundus, brushing the leaf dust from his clothing as he turned to smile at Childermas, his heart still pounding from the shock and exertion. "Mrs. Radcliffe would be proud." "I would hate to see you becoming too settled," Childermas said, teeth glinting sharp in his smile, and pushed himself away from the door. "I have heard how schoolmasters can get." "Well," Segundus said, leading him through to the dining room. "I thank you for your concern, but I fear I haven't been in the occupation long enough for that." He smiled over his shoulder at Childermas. "But it is always a pleasure to see you, sir. I am glad you have come. You are just in time for dinner. Is Vinculus with you?" Childermas laughed. "Yes and no. He begged to be left off at Malton for the evening. He has put up with a lot these last few weeks, so I thought it would do no harm. He will arrive tomorrow."
"Oh, do you think it is wise to—"
"I have paid for the room and put a half-crown behind the bar. I have instructed the barman that at least threepence is reserved for food and to stop serving him once the rest is run out." He shrugged. "Of course, he may well convince others to buy more for him, but I have done what I can. Myself, I am as glad for an evening apart as he is."
"I do not doubt it," said Segundus, "but I am afraid that you will find little tranquility here."
He opened the door to the dining room, and the wall of noise created by a dozen boys dining together hit them like a solid object. He offered Childermas a wry smile and gestured him in. The boys were pleased to be introduced to Childermas, to hear of his travels and the magic he had done and seen. Soon Childermas was the focus of the attention of the dozen boys as he spoke of the adventures he had been on, his dealings with the various magical societies he and Vinculus were visiting, the singular magics that were being discovered by the coast at Boscastle, the expeditions out onto fairy roads, and, least thrillingly, the passing on of warm greetings from Mrs. Lennox, whom they had visited in Bath. The discussion lasted long after the empty plates had been cleared away and turned into something of a lecture. The students all sat with more attention than they had all day, so Segundus decided not to interfere, not to call them to their evening studies in the library. He did not mention this decision aloud, as he knew instinctively that it would have broken the spell Childermas was weaving with his voice.
the same magic that had held the York magicians in thrall. So he just sat back and let the magic work on him too, low and rich and enveloping. And truly, Segundus was as interested to hear his tales as the students, was glad for the opportunity to sit and listen to Childemas, to watch him captivate his audience and be captivated in turn. When Mr. Levy caught his eye, he merely shook his head, and the young gentleman caught his meaning and relaxed in his chair to listen along with the boys. The spell was broken when the maid entered to shut the curtains and light the candles against the dark night. They had missed the sunset, all eyes focused on Childemas as they had been. "I have kept you from your lessons," Childemas laughed. He shot an apologetic look at Segundus, who smiled and shook his head. "On the contrary," he said, standing, "I am sure we can all agree that you have been more educational than I today. As you can see, we are rather short-handed. The young gentlemen have been invited to Mr. Fothergill's school to see how things are done there." He turned a smile on the one young gentleman who remained. "Mr. Levy kindly postponed his own invitation so as not to leave me entirely single-handed." Segundus dismissed the students, and they filed out, each with a, "Thank you, Mr. Childemas." Segundus had to physically usher Edward Flint from the room when he asked Childemas one last question after another, hardly allowing him time to answer in his excitement. "Mr. Childemas will be here tomorrow to answer you, Edward," Segundus said, biting down on a smile. "Now give him the chance of a breath." The boy ducked out of the room, blushing, and rushed to catch up with his friends. Levy got to his feet. "And Mr. Segundus, I will supervise the boys in the common room and see them to bed," he said. "I know you and Mr. Childemas must have business to discuss." Segundus looked to the young man in surprise. "Mr. Levy," he cried, "that is very kind." He tried to think of a but, of some way to avoid putting his personal wishes above the needs of the school. But he knew Levy was more than capable of looking after the students for a few hours, and the promise of a quiet conversation with Childemas by the library fire was too tempting to refuse. He instead settled for, "Thank you," and smiled as Levy bid them good evening. "I am sorry," Segundus said, taking the chair beside Childemas. "You would probably have preferred to wash and change after your journey rather than be tricked into teaching a lesson." "I do not mind," said Childemas, leaning back in his chair and closing his eyes with a deep sigh. "Although I might excuse myself now if you don't object." "Of course not," Segundus cried. "I shall send Charles to your room with some hot water and towels." Charles happened to enter the room just then and caught Segundus's eye. He left again with a nod. "The school day is over, so I will be in the library if you care to join me when you're ready. I would be glad of the company, if that is agreeable to you. Do not feel obligated if you would rather rest, however." "Of course." Childemas gave a small, tired smile. "And I would not worry, Mr. Segundus. You have a particular way of never making a man feel obliged." He stood and took his leave. Segundus looked through the door for some moments after he had gone, his teeth in his lip, before shaking himself and retiring to the library. Segundus spent some time wandering around the room and lighting the candles. More than needed, really, but the way they reflected against the dark glass in the windows and in the great mantelpiece mirror settled the restlessness in him, and he tried to shut out the little voice in his mind that accused him of wastefulness. When he had lit all he could light, he sat with the newest Friends of English Magic, the first volume published since Norrell's disappearance, and delivered only that morning. He was intrigued to see how the Norrellite cause would be put forward in such a changed England, had, in fact, been looking forward to the reading of it all day, but now found he couldn't settle to it. His eyes slid off the words and took nothing in as they returned again and again to watch the door. He chewed at his lip, found himself staring into the fire as he turned over and over what had so nearly been said that night at the society. Would Childemas come? His journey had been long, and in such a gale, Segundus could not possibly deny him an evening of rest in his room after such a day. He must have been up well before the sun to make it from Pontefract as he had. Time wore on, and Segundus allowed himself to relax, deciding that Childemas had opted for a well-deserved rest rather than an evening in the library. The breath in his chest released itself, and his eyes caught once more on the words on the paper before him. He was disappointed to miss out on his company, but he knew there would be tomorrow, and perhaps the days following. Almost 2 hours after dinner, the door opened, and Childemas entered, looking less ragged. This time, the door opened softly and silently, but despite the lack of a slam and the bustle of invading leaves, Segundus once more felt his breath catch and his heartbeat quicken. The strangeness of the day had infected him as well as his students, it seemed, and he found his fingers suddenly restless around his pencil. He looked up from his reading with a smile, which Childemas returned in his usual way. "Do not let me disturb you," Childemas said, his voice low, "but do you have the latest modern magician?" I have it here, in fact, said Segundus, and he reached to the table beside him for the journal. It was one of several magical periodicals which had sprung up in the last 6 months, and by his opinion, one of the better ones. He handed it to Childemas. You must let me know your thoughts, he told him, breathing in the sweet tobacco and fresh air scent of him. Childemas's fingers brushed against his as he took the journal, and Segundus hoped he hadn't noticed the shiver. I rather rate it, he finished, rather more quietly than he had begun. You will have them as soon as they are formed, Childemas replied, his wry smile twisting on his lips. And more, no doubt. Segundus would always be astonished at how much difference there was sitting in silence with another to sitting in silence alone. They each sat at their own readings, but the occasional sigh or rustle of a page turning from Childemas's direction made something warm and soft grow to fill the room. Despite everything crowding in his breast, the things he needed to discuss, they were quieted by the weary sound of Childemas's breath, the tiredness beneath his eyes. The strange urgency that had pushed Segundus to Mrs. Sorsby so recently was still there, clinging to his breastbone, but it had eased its grip, happy for now at the mere comfort of Childemas's presence, unwilling to cause any unnecessary tension in the relaxed lines of his posture or any tightness in his jaw. They had sat like this so often that such a conversation almost felt unnecessary. This article of Portishead's, Childemas said after some time, a soft rumble that Segundus almost didn't catch over the wind outside. He seems to be finding his own opinions once more. I thought so, Segundus agreed, looking at him across the fire. Although his theories about the rain's effects on non-meteorological magic beg further thought. Childemas gave a long nod, glancing up from the page with a joke in his eyes. I'm not sure I agree with his claims that gazebos should be erected around the country to stabilize conditions for magicians. I have found that magic cares very little for the comfort of the magician. Segundus laughed at that, a small, surprised sound. Childemas caught his eye, looking pleased with himself. He looked away when Charles came in with brandy and glasses. Segundus assured Charles they would need nothing else and that he may retire. I cannot believe the hour, remarked Segundus, as he heard the clock in the hall strike 10. Murmured Childemas, his eyes closed as he inhaled the scent of his brandy. Pleasant company is known to have that effect. You are sure of yourself, sir, Segundus joked, and Childemas caught his eye with a smile that felt like it was letting him in on a secret. I'm just glad to have a comfortable chair and a warm fire, he answered, his eyes heavy-lidded as he nodded toward Segundus. And the company of a good friend, of course. He sighed and stretched his legs out in front of him, then took a sip of brandy. I fear I'm getting old, John. I never used to dream of chairs so. He chuckled, a low rumble that seemed to fill Segundus's chest, and took another sip. Well, said Segundus, I'm glad we can furnish you with such comforts and some small relief. Childemas raised his glass towards him in a leisurely toast, and they both drank. The brandy warmed Segundus from the inside, burning down his throat and tingling out to his limbs. He watched as Childemas settled back in his chair and closed his eyes, the whole line of him weary. He schooled the itch in his hands to reach out and smooth the hair from Childemas's face. How long have you been on the road? He asked, voice quiet, keeping his concerned eyes on Childemas. There's no need to look at me like that, John, Childemas said, his eyes still closed and his mouth curling in a lopsided smile. He cracked an eye open and laughed a little to see himself vindicated. Segundus tried to frown at him, but could not help the fondness blooming in him from showing through. I'm well enough. It doesn't seem as though you will need Sutton Grove tonight, Segundus said, and received a surprised laugh in return. No, indeed. Childemas laughed again and rolled his shoulders, stretching his neck. Segundus felt the strange energy of the day seeping from him, his own blinks growing longer as he stifled a yawn. He left for bed when he had finished his glass and told Childemas not to stay up too late. Childemas replied that he planned to retire when he finished with Hadley Bright's dissection of Chaston and picked up the Modern Magician from where he had discarded it when the brandy had been brought in. The wind still wailed through the branches of the autumn trees as Segundus wound his way towards his room by the light of his candle. He paused as he passed the staircase to the student dormitories, but heard no suspicious noises and continued on to his room. With a sigh, he started to untie his neckcloth, the wind still rattling at the windows and tugging at the flames in the fireplace. He felt itchy, the restlessness that had left him in the library returning full force. He folded his neckcloth and laid it over the back of a chair, covered it with his jacket, then started on his waistcoat buttons. Halfway down his waistcoat, he came to his senses, his heart finally overruling his routine. How ridiculous! Just over a week ago, he'd come to a decision. Was he to turn his back on that now? And for what? The excuse of a tomorrow which would allow them no more privacy than they had enjoyed this evening? He paused, his hand against his chest, feeling the rise and fall of his own breathing. But beside that was almost a phantom, the ghost of a touch long imagined. He cursed himself and took up his candle, striding back to the library before he could talk himself out of it, hoping he had not missed his chance. Childemas was no longer reading, but stood leaning against the fireplace, bracing against the mantelpiece and staring into the flames as he drew on his pipe. His brows were drawn together, and he looked severe, lit from below by the fire. The light in the library had died bit by bit with the candles. "Oh," Segundus exclaimed, a little startled by the sight of him. He had, he realized, expected Childemas to have gone to bed. Perhaps he had hoped it to give himself more time to think. Childemas looked at Segundus in the doorway, lowering his pipe and exhaling slowly, the smoke curling around his face so that Segundus had the feeling he was watching a dragon sizing up its next meal. Childemas said nothing, only stood watching him, the firelight flickering over his face rendering him as inscrutable as ever, his eyes dark and impenetrable. At length, Segundus walked over. Childemas held something out, turning from the fire, but Segundus was unable to draw his eyes from the man's face in order to see what it was. "I believe this is what you're looking for?" His voice was quiet, a question in it that had nothing to do with the volume in his hand. It took Segundus a great deal of effort to look down, away from Childemas's eyes. It was the latest issue of the Friends of English Magic, the one Segundus had been reading. He felt quite unable to move. He saw the offer for what it was, an opportunity to step back from the moment before them. The air felt like that before a storm, electric and promising, and something in his chest was swelling in anticipation of lightning, leaving no space for his lungs. "No," Segundus said. His heart stopped for a beat, pausing as if taking a moment to prepare itself. He reached forward and took the warm bowl of Childemas's pipe in his hand, drew it away from Childemas's lips. He heard something like a breath catching in Childemas's throat. The lightning struck. In the space of a moment, the pipe slipped from Segundus's hand onto the hearth, the journal fluttering to the floor, as Childemas grasped Segundus's upper arm in a firm hold. "Enough of this," Childemas said lowly, his voice rough as a millstone. Segundus looked up and was surprised to see something akin to desperation in his eyes as they flicked over Segundus's face. "Enough of this damn dancing around each other." Still, neither of them moved. Segundus felt quite paralyzed, caught in Childemas's arms, so... He had imagined this. Oh, he had imagined it often. Yet the reality of it shook those imaginings apart. His breath came shallowly around his heart, which was quite firmly lodged, racing in his throat. Childemas's hands were hot through his shirt sleeves, his fingers digging in tightly, urgently. "John..." Segundus managed to breathe the name, barely hearing himself over the blood thundering in his ears. He touched his fingers to Childemas's jaw, and that touch seemed to shock them both into motion once more. In a moment, Childemas's mouth was against his in a crushing kiss, and Segundus's hands were in Childemas's long, ragged hair. "John," he said again, this time against Childemas's lips. It was a ferocious thing, as if they had been swept up in the wind outside and become part of it. Segundus was aware of his back hitting the wall, but the heat of Childemas against him, finally, finally, the press of his lips against Segundus's mouth, his cheek, his jaw, his neck, made the sensation dim in comparison. Childemas breathed his name against his skin, hot and damp and enough to make him shiver. The pressure of Childemas against him, the heat and the solidity of him, did more to unravel him than he could have predicted. He pulled Childemas's mouth back to his, to kiss and bite at his lips as he had wanted to for so long, tasting smoke and brandy. Childemas's hair was soft between his fingers, and the sounds he made when Segundus clutched it tighter sent tremors through him. He had wanted to speak, some small part of his mind whispered, but, oh, this was so much more to the point than talking. There would be plenty of time for that, but this...
They were pressed so close that Segundus could feel the beat of Childermas's heart against his chest and the growing hardness of him against his hip. The thought of it made him gasp, stealing the breath from Childermas's lungs. Childermas pushed even closer to him, wedging a thigh between Segundus's legs that put such exquisite pressure against that most sensitive part of him that he had to drop his head back against the bookcase and release the low moan that had been building in him. "Yes," Childermas said, hoarse and wild-eyed as he watched Segundus. For his part, Segundus hooked his knee around Childermas's hip, pulling him closer still. Blasphemy tore from Childermas's throat as their pricks came together through the fabric of their breeches, and he buried his face in Segundus's shoulder as their hips rocked against each other. But Segundus's thoughts were in such disarray that he could not latch on to what he had meant, so instead he slipped his hands down to take a firm hold of Childermas's rear and breathed his name. This earned him a low, animalistic growl, which sent another pulse of blood to his prick.
"I have felt as if we were in a country dance," Childermas said, his voice as ragged as his hair, his face pressed to the space behind Segundus's ear as they rocked together, his wet lips and rough jaw thrilling at Segundus's throat. "Coming close before being borne away by business or propriety." "Oh," gasped Segundus, "I no longer give a damn about propriety."
His fingers digging into Childermas's shoulder as his teeth nipped at his neck. He had reservations about this, he was sure, but he couldn't seem to bring them to mind currently.
"And curse business."
Childermas chuckled, a rumbling sound that Segundus felt through his chest, and pulled back a little to look at him. A smile was working its way up the side of his face. Segundus pushed forward to kiss it.
"Not as pretty as your usual words," Childermas said against his mouth, and Segundus felt the sharp edge of that smile catch in his lip. "But I like them."
He kissed Segundus again, hot and wet with the slight of his tongue. Segundus could not help the moan that escaped him then, and sunk his teeth into Childermas's lower lip to feel him shiver.
"I have prettier," said Segundus, feeling emboldened by the taste of Childermas's tongue.
He pulled back just a little, just far enough to see Childermas's expression.
"Come to bed."
His hands fisted in Childermas's lapels, and he felt the hitch of his breath. Childermas's waistcoat was open, and although Segundus would have sworn it was buttoned when he entered the room, he had no recollection of it being undone.
"Aye," said Childermas, though it was little more than a release of breath in the approximate shape of the vowels.
His dark eyes shone like beacons in the firelight.
"Aye," he said again, "I like those," and pushed close for another clashing kiss.
When he stepped back, Segundus felt cold from the lack of him. They each stood for a moment, collecting their breath and their senses. Segundus picked up his candle and led the way into the corridor. He crept along, Childermas close behind him, feeling giddy as a schoolboy. He froze at every squeak, every too heavy footstep, to listen for any response from the rest of the household. It was past 12, the mournful tolling of the clock in the entrance hall below told him, and everyone was asleep. He ushered Childermas into his room, then shut and locked the door as quietly as he was able, only turning when he was sure it was secure. The sight that befell him when he turned took his breath away. Childermas had removed his jacket and waistcoat entirely and hung them over the back of the chair. He had removed his shoes and set them neatly beside the chair, beside Segundus's own. He now stood by the bed, his shoulder propping up the bedpost, while he regarded Segundus with a heavy gaze, one that Segundus realized he had grown quite used to seeing.
"This will change a great many things," Segundus told him, setting his candle on the bedside table.
"Not so many," Childermas countered, in a voice more gentle than his usual tone. He reached out a hand and Segundus went to him.
"We shall have to be careful," Segundus said, shivering as Childermas pulled his shirt from his breeches and slid his hands over the skin of his waist, the small of his back.
"I am always careful." His hands were cool and rough, and Segundus's breath stuttered at the feel of them on his own flushed skin.
"But then it has never done me much good," he sighed, and brought his hands to Childermas's rough cheek, gazing in amazement as Childermas turned his face into the touch, his eyes fluttering closed.
"Being careful of you."
"Have I been such a nuisance?"
Childermas's eyes were dark and hooded, shining with something like amusement.
"Oh yes," Segundus laughed. "Most vexing."
He traced the shape of Childermas's ear with his thumb. The shudder he got in response felt like a reward.
"It has been most inconvenient, having you work your way into even my simplest thoughts, making me miss you when you are not here."
And what of your thoughts now? How am I vexing you now?
He caught hold of Segundus's wrist, his thumb rubbing lightly over the flutter of pulse there, and brought Segundus's fingers to his mouth. Segundus's blood was already liquid fire, his pulse heavy between his legs, but Childemas's words and the intensity of his gaze stirred him to a new heat. The flicker of Childemas's tongue against his fingertips, the scrape of his teeth, drew from him a less than dignified sound. Too soon, the grip on his waist was gone. Childemas's hands came to his arms once more and pulled him closer before sliding down to hold his elbows with a gentleness opposite to the urgency of the library. And then his nose was pressed to Segundus's temple, his chest pressed against Segundus's as he inhaled deeply, his breath shaking a little. It was all the encouragement Segundus needed to slip his hands up under Childemas's shirt to feel the warmth of his skin and the hard curve of his ribs beneath. With his veins on fire with want as they were, it was a quiet moment that Segundus felt he should perhaps have been frustrated by, but he found himself glad for the time to collect his wits, to soak in the feel of Childemas's embrace, his breath at his hairline. He was content to stand quietly and feel his warmth. He quivered with the intimacy of it, of Childemas's chest against his through only the linen of their shirts, Childemas's rough cheek resting against his own, Childemas's hands sliding from his arms to lay flat against his back to pull him even closer. He could not remember when he had last been so close to another, had last been touched so deliberately, had last been held. It was an embrace that felt like a promise, and Segundus leaned into it, pressed his face to the crook of Childemas's neck, and breathed in the scent of him.
If you knew how.
But Childemas trailed off, Segundus never to hear what he didn't know. He wanted to ask Childemas to finish his statement, but found himself instead saying, no small amount of desperation in his voice,
"Kiss me."
Childemas did. His hands removed from Segundus's back and cradled his face, his thumbs brushing against the hair at his temples as he kissed Segundus thoroughly.
The kiss quickly grew teeth, Childemas's gentle touch at his temples turning to fingers scratching deliciously against his scalp as he licked into his mouth in a way that made his knees weak. Nearly tripping over his own feet as he went, Segundus maneuvered them the couple of feet to the edge of the bed. Childemas fell to it in surprise, the mattress having hit against the backs of his knees. Segundus took the opportunity to pull the shirt over his own head, and was glad that Childemas mirrored him in the action. He took a moment to look at the long, lean line of Childemas stretched out before him, his wiry chest and the dark hair scattered sparsely upon it, which caught the light of the fire, his narrow hips disappearing below the waist of his breeches, the unmistakable shape of his excitement pressing against the falls.
"Oh, John," said Segundus, and descended upon him.
Childemas's hands clutched at his back as they kissed, slipped to his hair as Segundus placed his lips on the newly exposed skin before him. He tasted Childemas's neck, his shoulders, the hard planes of his chest. He kissed the round scar on his shoulder, dipped his tongue into the hollow at the base of his neck. Experimentally, he took a nipple into his mouth and neatly catalogued the response he got. A choked gasp and an arching of the back, as positive, as something to be explored further. He turned his ministrations to the other nipple while teasing the first with his fingers. The noises Childemas made at these touches were electric, his hips jerking to leave no doubt of his enjoyment, and sent thrills through Segundus just to hear them, to feel the friction of Childemas's hips against his belly. These reactions were so wonderful in Segundus's mind that he kept at it for some time, switching sides to give each of Childemas's nipples equal attention. He kept at it, in fact, until Childemas tightened his hands painfully in Segundus's hair and moaned out, "You'll kill me, John." Segundus tore himself away and looked up at Childemas's face, found him flushed and panting, his lips bitten red. Keeping his eyes on Childemas, he placed one last kiss on his sternum, a hitch of breath, a cut-off moan, and continued on his way down. By the time he reached the waist of Childemas's breeches, his hands were shaking, so he was rather slow in undoing the buttons. Childemas could not seem to keep his own hands still. First they clutched in Segundus's hair, sending sparks down his spine as they tugged. Then they would dance down his neck, over his shoulders, grasp at the bedclothes, then return to his hair and start the cycle all over again. Finally, he unfastened Childemas's breeches and sat back first to admire him, his prick standing dark and proud from the folds of fabric, then to tug them off, taking his stockings with them. Childemas propped himself on his elbows to watch, his cheeks and chest flushed.
Segundus caught his eye, held it for a moment, and then ducked back down to tongue gently, experimentally, at the head of him. Childemas's groan seemed to come from somewhere deep within him, pulled slowly out by the touch of Segundus's tongue. The tip leaked the precursor to his seed, and as the salty bitterness of him made Segundus's mouth water, he was all of a sudden aware of how long it had been since he had last tasted another man's seed, of how long he could have been doing this with Childemas, if it hadn't been for his own damned cowardice and inaction. He took a deep breath to steady himself, to calm his racing heart and mind. He looked up at Childemas, stretched out beneath him, propped up on his elbows to watch with his impossibly dark eyes. Segundus kept that dark gaze as he lowered his head, let out a moan of his own as he took Childemas into his mouth. Childemas gasped his name, low and rough, and dug his nails into the sheets as he slumped back to the bed. Segundus closed his eyes in pleasure at the texture of him on his tongue, the heat of him, the musky scent of him filling his nostrils. How often had he let himself imagine this in the dark of the night? And yet his imaginings had been nothing like this. Had never included the delicious pressure of Childemas's heel at the small of his back, or the way Childemas's voice caught on his name, as if it were being dredged up from some deep, hidden place. Too soon, Childemas's hands tightened in his hair and pulled him back and away, up Childemas's body. "Come here, come here." The words were hoarse and a little slurred. Segundus let himself be pulled up for another kiss, hot and wet and wondrous, filled with Childemas's moan. "Get those off." A chuckle rumbled from Childemas's chest, and Segundus smiled down at him. He sat up and undid his breeches, stepped off the bed to slide the clothing from his hips and step out of his stockings. He moved more hurriedly than gracefully, but was too far gone to be embarrassed at his own stumbling, despite the weight of Childemas's gaze on him. Childemas sat up on the bed and watched, his dark eyes roaming every part of Segundus now exposed, and although he felt his cheeks coloring at the inspection, he let himself be looked at until Childemas said, "John," like a sigh, and held his hand out to him. He took it, twining their fingers together, and let Childemas pull him onto the bed, onto his lap. Rough fingers danced over his ribs, bringing goose pimples to his skin. Hands landed on his hips, pulling him forward until they were pressed together, then traveled back to squeeze his rear in a tight grip. Segundus gasped, his head tilting back, and Childemas took advantage of his exposed neck to fasten his teeth there. There was so much hot skin against him, Childemas's chest against his own, Childemas's back under the flat of his hands, their cocks pressed so sweetly together between their bodies, that Segundus couldn't help the rock of his hips. He had wanted this, oh, he had wanted this for so long, he could not now remember when it had started. "If you knew," Childemas panted again, his hands kneading Segundus's buttocks over and over until he was trembling. "If you knew how long I have wanted you." He sucked hard at Segundus's collarbone. "I do not think you will have me." Segundus took his jaw in his hand and tilted him up for a kiss. "I will have you even when you speak nonsense," he admonished, and pushed Childemas onto his back with the weight of his body. Childemas laughed and brought his arms around Segundus's shoulders, rolling over so that they were lying face to face. Childemas reached between them, taking them both in hand. "Yes," Segundus whispered, his eyes closing as he felt Childemas against him, hot and hard and still wet from his own mouth. He hiked his knee further up Childemas's hip and tried to bring them closer. "Yes," as Childemas's free hand grasped at his rear again, guiding the pace as they thrust together. It was all too much after too long, but the scent of Childemas's fresh sweat skin, the rasp of stubble against his neck, the low, throaty encouragements he felt as well as heard. His whole body was flushed with it, the memory of Childemas's seed lingering on his tongue, and he spent before he knew what was happening, like a door slamming open, and he stifled his shout in Childemas's neck. "I'm sorry," he gasped. "I'm sorry, I..." Childemas cut him off with a hard kiss, his hand coming up to clutch at his hair. "Don't you dare," he growled. "Don't you dare apologize." The words came from his mouth with a stutter as he kept thrusting against Segundus's hip, slippery now with his release. The feel of it, of Childemas desperately seeking his pleasure against him, made his body echo with his own crisis. "Christ," Childemas groaned, and Segundus kissed him, pulled him over so that Childemas was on top of him, and bit his lip and licked it better with his tongue. He slipped his own hand down to join with Childemas's. That did it, as Childemas let out a raw groan as he spent hot and wet between them. For some time, Segundus was only vaguely aware of what was happening around him. He was aware of the heat and weight of Childemas atop him, of their breaths becoming less labored, of Childemess's fingers stroking up and down his sides restlessly, but it all felt as if it was happening beyond a sheet of muslin, hazy. He opened his eyes and blinked sleepily at Childemess, who was looking at him with a curious expression.
"You're growing gray," Childemess said, his voice little more than a rumble.
Segundus hit his face against his chest. "I should have guessed that you would have such fine pillow talk."
He pressed a short kiss to Childemess's chest, partly to show that he was not truly upset, partly because he could not help himself.
"He didn't let me finish," Childemess chastised, his fingers threading through Segundus's hair. "I had not noticed before, but I like it."
He pressed his lips against Segundus's temple, let them linger a moment.
"That lends you a dignified air."
Segundus could only let out a breath of a laugh at that, tilting his head up to capture Childemess's lips once more. It was a long, slow, open-mouthed kiss that merged into the next and the next, punctuated with lazy slides of tongue. It was a kiss that warmed him from the inside, not the blaze Childemess had started earlier, but something gentler, more sustainable, something comforting that was nothing quite like what he had expected.
"I suppose we will have to move," Segundus sighed after some time, raising his head.
"Aye," Childemess agreed, "but not quite yet." They lay quietly for a time, the silence warmed by small kisses and touches. Segundus had denied himself this for so long, and at this moment he could not for the life of him think why. He felt more at peace than he had in years, listening to Childemess's heart beat slow and strong against his ear, kissing him whenever he felt the urge. At last he sat up, feeling the cold of the autumn night nipping at his skin. He went to the basin on his wash table and wiped himself clean with a cloth, feeling Childemess's eyes on him. He felt he should be embarrassed to be watched when he was so naked, but he did not. He rinsed the cloth and carried it over to the bed to take the same care of Childemess. He watched as the muscles of Childemess's abdomen twitched at the touch of the cool, damp cloth. He wiped slowly, carefully. He licked his lips absently as their mingled seed was washed from Childemess's skin, now shining pale with water. He felt his heart skip a little at the thought and the sight, looking up at Childemess's face and saw his dark hooded eyes intent on him. Standing with as much composure as he could muster, he returned the cloth to the basin. When he turned around, Childemess had moved at the bed and pulled the covers back, slotting himself in invitingly. Segundus slipped in beside him and wrapped him in his arms as the sheets were pulled up around him. Had he been a younger man, he would have pressed himself against Childemess and kissed him until they were both eager once more, but he could see the weariness in Childemess's face and remembered his long journey and could feel sleep tugging at his own eyelids. Instead, he pressed a kiss to Childemess's forehead, to his nose, to his lips.
"I am glad my loss of patience was not unwelcome," Childemess murmured against his temple, his hand settling on Segundus's side while his thumb drew absent circles.
"I'm happy for it," he replied, pushing the hair back from Childemess's face to better see him in the flickering light of the dying fire. "I have thought of it often these last months," he admitted, pressing his face into Childemess's neck and breathing him in.
"I had wondered," Segundus said, voice low as his lips bumped against Childemess's, "if you would be too tired after your journey. It sounded a long one."
"Oh," Childemess said, wrapping an arm around Segundus's waist, pulling him close.
"It was not as long as that. Not to keep me from the pleasure of your company."
"Ah, more pretty words, I see," Segundus snorted.
"You came for my conversation. I am sorry to have kept you from it."
Childemess laughed, loose and easy, and Segundus felt something within him unspool.
"I'll have your conversation now, sir, if you're of a mind."
His eyes sparkled wickedly in the candlelight. "I doubt I'd be much of a partner for it now," Segundus laughed, and kissed the corner of Childemess's mouth where a smile hid. "You have quite ruined me for anything but sleep tonight." The smile Childemess gave now was wolfish, and he pulled Segundus closer still.
"I will show you what I can ruin you for tomorrow when I have not been riding for a week."
"Then you had best sleep now," Segundus said, nudging Childemess's nose with his own. "So tomorrow I might have your conversation, and you might have the pleasure of my company." He ducked his head to hide his yawn in Childemess's neck, turned it into a soft kiss. He raised his head in time to see a curious expression on Childemess's face. He brought his hand to Childemess's tired face,
stroked his thumb across his cheekbone, and kissed him again, soft and chaste. Absently, he wondered if he would ever be able to stop touching him now he had started.
"You are tired," he said, and smiled as Childermas rolled his eyes.
"Sleep. We can discuss things in the morning."
"Yes."
He felt the sharp exhale of Childermas's laugh and gentle fingers in his hair.
"I am curious to hear why you decided to visit my sister in the midst of a tempest."
Segundus groaned and pressed his face to Childermas's chest, but was unable to hold back his laugh.
"Not tonight," he pleaded.
"Perhaps tomorrow." He raised his head to look at Childermas, and was taken aback by the fondness in his gaze.
"All right," Childermas laughed, pushing his hand through Segundus's hair.
"Tomorrow."
"Good night then, John," he said, pressing his lips to Segundus's cheek.
He caught Childermas's hand in his, held it between their chests, and linked their fingers.
"Good night, John."